The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Today marks 50 years since the Miami Showband massacre. A number of memorial events are taking place both north and south to commemorate those who were killed in the ambush in 1975. Our reporter Josh Crosby has been meeting with those who survived the attack, and he brings us this report that includes graphic language and description.
We just thought what was happening was a regular check. The plan was to frame us as terrorists, so they were hiding the bomb under the driver's seat. This thing went off and killed the two unfortunate men who were planting it, and I was knocked into the field. I was shot at the time, I believe, with a dum-dum bullet, which exploded on impact to between 12 and 15 pieces inside me, did a lot of damage, and out under my left lung. Then three of the lads were killed, and that sort of changed our lives forever.
The bomb went off, it killed two of their guys. And what happened was it blew me over the ditch down into the field below. As soon as the bomb went off, there was a massive amount of gunfire. There was screaming, there was crying, there was shouting. It was absolute mayhem going on all around me. And I stuck my face into the grass and I held my breath for as long as I could. And I could hear all the voices shouting all sorts of strange things like, "Are you sure those bastards are dead?" And I got very frightened because I thought they're going to come back again and they're going to plug bullets into us. And I remembered as I was lying in the grass, the fire that came from the minibus been on fire. It set the ditch on fire. And that fire was coming up towards me. And I knew at some stage I was going to have to make a run for it. Otherwise, I could have been burnt alive.
In the early hours of July 31st, 1975, Fran O'Toole, Tony Geraghty and Brian McCoy were murdered in the Miami Showband Massacre. The killings sent shockwaves around the world when an innocent band could be targeted in this brutal way. The young musicians who were on their way home from a gig were known to some as the Irish Beatles. Road manager of the band, Brian McGuire, says they were reaching stardom in the music industry.
They were constantly on the road with one of the top bands in the country. So it was six nights a week.
Every town had a dance hall. And
every place had a dance hall. I mean, it was incredible. Like, the second night I went with the Miami and we came across the road to get into the ballroom, the place was absolutely jammed, right? We had to ring the man that owned it. He had to come out down into the restaurant and put a ladder down for us to climb up to get into the ballroom and then go out into the back and go up the stairs up into the dressing rooms.
Band members Stephen Travers and Des Lee survived the attack in Buskill. When they look back on the success of the Miami Showband, they say it was the power of bringing people from community divides together.
When I joined the Miami Inn, we would have played twice, at least twice every week in the north. It was an adventure if we were stopped by, you know, security forces. I didn't really see the danger in it. The real legacy of the Miami Showband is that we brought people together during a time when the sectarianism was rife. And whenever we played, when Catholics, Protestants came to hear the Miami, because we were a mixed band of Catholics and Protestants from North and South. So when people came to hear us, sectarianism was left outside the door. And people came in and they saw each other as human beings. So our legacy is that we held the communities together to a great extent during the Troubles. And that, for me, is far, far more valuable. I'm much prouder of that legacy than I would be if we had left a few hit records behind, you know.
Well, the show bands in that era were massive. We were known as the Irish Beatles. We would have had 2,000 people outside trying to get in.
There was also a special power that the show bands had, and especially the Miami, that they brought communities from both sides together.
Correct. We went out to give people of Northern Ireland, during that terrible time of the Troubles, to give them 2 hours of fun, entertainment, laughter, dance, possibly meet a partner and get married. So, you know, we were responsible for marriages and everything else. So, no, our job was to entertain people, no matter what colour, no matter what creed. That didn't come into it with us.
It was in the town of Banbridge in County Down where the band played before being ambushed. Walking the streets here today, 50 years on, people have fond memories of the show band era. In particular, local woman Carol, who saw them perform on that very night.
Well, it was brilliant memories, and I was there that night, so it was, and I couldn't believe it, that they were all shotgun home. Well, they weren't all shot, but most of them.
You saw them here that very last night, here in Banbridge.
They played there in the Castle Ballroom.
What can you remember? I know it's 50 years ago, but...
I can't remember that much, but I just remember them playing.
And then hearing the news the following day?
Yeah, it was desperate, wasn't it? Unbelievable, just because they were bound and where they were from.
I heard that they brought the communities together. It didn't matter what side of the line you were on.
Yes, as long as it was in a community hall. You know, like the Castle Ballroom was for everybody. You know, that's where they played that night in Banbridge.
I do remember it well, yes.
What was the feeling like here in the town?
Well, it wasn't good now. It wasn't good. But those are the times we're living in then, so it was all wrong.
There's no place we haven't danced. We dance the legs off ourselves. Now we can't dance anymore.
My cousin played with Dickie Rock. My cousin played with him, but the latter years, you know.
And did you ever get to see the Miami show band?
I seen the Miami, yeah.
And your memories of those days?
Oh, they were great.
Well, they were terrific. I'm English. I'm here 50 years, but I think I were devastated. I felt so ashamed that somebody could do that to some other person. And it upsets me today because they were just young lads, and God love them, and their lives were ended that night.
Innocent musicians.
Yeah. Innocent to the core.
When the band headed off from Banbridge, little did they know what was awaiting them on the main road to Newry. Disguised as a British Army checkpoint, loyalist paramilitaries flagged the band's bus down. Des and Stephen describe what unfolded next.
The next thing is we were asked to get out of the van, and we never thought anything of it whatsoever. We were told to face the ditch. All the usual questions that we would have got asked. And there was one guy who was totally different to the rest of the guys in the way that he spoke and the way that he was dressed. And then at one stage, they said they were going to the van to check the van. And I said, well, do you mind if I take my saxophone out of the van and put it on the road and I'll show you it's a saxophone? So they said, OK. So I went to the van, took the saxophone out, put it on the road. And instead of going back to where I was in the line, I went and I stood next to the minibus, not knowing that what the guys were actually doing was they were putting a 10-pound bomb into the minibus, and then they were going to tell us to drive down the road and the bomb would have exploded and we would have all been killed and we would have been accused of carrying weapons for the IRA. But the bomb went off, and I remembered as I was lying in the grass, I called out Fran, Brian and Tony, and I got no response. I called out Steve, and Steve was murmuring. And I said to Steve, Stephen, look, I'm going to make a run for it. I'm going to try and get down to Newry and I'm going to get help. I didn't know, as I got up from that grass, were the guys still going to be there and was I going to be shot dead? If I had been running for Ireland in a running race that day, I would have won a gold medal. I'll never forget what I saw on that road. There was body parts everywhere. The guys who blew themselves up when the bomb went off, there was body parts all over the road. It was the most horrific scene I have ever seen in my life.
So they were hiding a bomb under the driver's seat. You know, for years we thought it was in the back of the van, but it was under the driver's seat. The plan was then that they would say, thanks very much for your cooperation. We've driven down the road. And we now know that the timing mechanism was set for about between 10 and 15 minutes.
Why do you think it was done?
Let's be frank about it. If it had worked, it was a brilliant plan because it would have sealed the border. The Irish government wouldn't have had any reason to object to sealing the border, putting more stringent controls, security controls on the border. It would have shut the border.
So to make it appear that innocent musicians are carrying bombs was going to be their their lightning rod to get that passed.
Absolutely right. Look, they would have said, if you can't trust musicians, then you can't trust anybody. Everybody has to be searched. But it was even more ambitious than that, because when you consider that every Irish person crossing any border there would have been a sort of understanding that Irish people were suspect. It would have put tabs on the movement of an entire diaspora.
Drummer Ray Miller headed in a different direction to the band, and road manager Brian Maguire would usually have been driving behind the band's bus, but on this occasion, he was ahead of them by a few minutes. Brian has a different theory as to what was supposed to happen on July 31st, 1975.
There was a car parked in a car park. Next thing, it pulled out behind me and came up, and it should have passed me, but it didn't. So I speeded up, and it did, and I slowed down, and it slowed down. I started to get worried. I thought, honestly, I thought I was going to be shot.
Things were being orchestrated.
Yeah, I mean, he pulled out and passed me at the stupidest place. But what he was doing was, the other members of the gang were parked up in the left, right? So when he flashed, the guys come out and set up the block, because they knew the band were behind them.
Why do you think the band was targeted?
I think this may sound weird and odd, but it was at a time where there'd been 27 people murdered in what was known as the Murder Triangle. This is my opinion, right? The problem that the British had then was that they had to get this stopped. They reckoned that it was a time to get rid of them. I'm totally convinced in my own mind that they were meant to be done rather than us.
Why do you believe that the group were the intended targets? Is it due to the fuse going off so soon? Was there a change in the closing time that night or something?
The dance would normally have been a half one finish. This is the second week of the 12th fortnight, and it was a 1 o'clock finish. We were half an hour earlier on the road than we would be expected to. I can't prove this, but that's my view.
Memorials are taking place to mark the 50th anniversary of the Miami Showband Massacre. There are new books being published, and also a memorial concert is taking place in Dublin on September 29th. But half a century on, what do those who survived the massacre say is the band's legacy?
How can you remember something like that? I mean, personally, it never leaves your mind. Never in any way leaves your mind.
And the way you've carried on your life since, whether it be work or relationships, it's definitely played a part of your decision making and everything.
Yeah, it does. You know, everything is different. Like, I didn't go up for about 3 years. I didn't go over the border. Wouldn't go over the border. I know it's home, where I come from, but no, I just couldn't go up.
Is it questioning how come you were ahead and not behind?
It's not that. It's just, it's always there, you know.
Brian, thanks very much for sharing your story with me and how it's affected your life and people around you.
It's something that you'll never forget, you know. And it's changed me, I'm sure, some way in personality, you know. I'm probably a different guy from what I was. But I don't know that. I'm still me. For the better or worse.
Because I wasn't able to perform anymore in Northern Ireland because of the threat in my life and everything else, I decided I think the best thing for me and my family to do is to get out of Ireland and emigrate, which I did. I emigrated to South Africa and I brought my band with me.
The threats continued.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always felt the threat was there, you know. I was told, one day we will get you.
So you left Ireland for over 20 years and you're back again.
23 years and I'm back here now.
Now, I know that Miami was not a political band, but you were still caught up in the conflict and the troubles. So as a survivor of the troubles, what do you think could be done to quell any tensions that still exist in terms of discrimination or sectarianism or any type of violence that can still erupt?
Well, you see, the problem we have today is this problem now is down to the dissidents. When the actual massacre occurred, people were horrified at what had happened because people wanted to know, why did this happen to a group of musicians? And, you know, I don't ever want to see this happening again. And I just say to myself, when are we ever going to grow up and learn? You know, for the sake of our children and our grandchildren and the grandchildren after that again. Are we going to continue this nonsense? It's about time we learn to grow up and get Ireland to a situation where we don't have to live like this anymore.
Our three lads were killed. I was physically injured. But over the years, what's transpired really is, you know, the mental the trauma, the psychological trauma, back in 75. We didn't have any counselling, so it had a terrible effect.
50 years on now, how should the massacre be remembered? How should the band be remembered? How can this all be defined?
This 50th anniversary is a celebration of their lives. It's a celebration of the lives of Fran O'Toole and Brian McCoy and Tony Geraghty. But it must be a celebration. This is not a commemoration where we all, you know, feel sad. We've got a concert. Des Lee got on to me last year saying, no, we have to. We have to have a concert this year. So I said, who are we going to get? And then it struck me, you know what? I'd like to get a lot of the young bands as well. Now, obviously, some of our contemporaries are still there and there's some of them getting back together. Yeah.
That's going to be some night in Dublin.
Well, it's on the 29th of September at Vicar Street. All of the profits from the concert are going to Irish Cancer Society. And hopefully that celebration will be carried forward when, although Des now tells me that he's looking forward to the 75th anniversary.
And you have an even bigger cast of names on the stage then.
We will, yeah. God knows what will be around at that stage, yeah.
Miami Show Band members Stephen Travers and Des Lee, who are both releasing new books this year. And you can have more information on the 50th anniversary memorial concert on the Vicar Street website or from Ticketmaster.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.